Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another envious episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Matthew Friedman from Movin' Out. Now, that's opening up this week. Be one of the first to get an inside look at this show. Also, Chicago critic Tom Williams brings us two more audio reviews. And of course, as always, we have Chicago's theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, giving you the theater news for the week of June 26th, 2006. Well, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee has celebrated its 100th performance at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place. You may have remembered the production opening in March, and now they've already reached the Grand Cent. And it seems like their success is just going to keep on rolling. The Tribune Stage Ticker is reporting that the producers have decided to pull out of the San Francisco market to focus more on the Chicago production, and it seems like it's going to be around here until at least next Christmas. Congratulations, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. The show is still going on. Don't miss it. Well, City Lit Theater has announced a pretty highfalutin 2006-2007 season. The four shows this year are going to include the world premiere of Frank Galati's The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That will be running and starting in September. After that, the director of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Terry McCabe, will be bringing his own show about called Christmas As We Grow Older, and that will be running right before the Christmas season. And then coming up after the new year will be The Juniper Tree, a tragic household tale by Wendy Kesselman. That will begin in February, and then closing out the season will be Gidget. That's right, based off of the popular 1950s novel and television series. And as many of you know, City Lit performs up there off the Bryn Mawr stop. Head up there and check the season out. It's going to be a good one. Apple Tree Theater up in Highland Park has just opened the winning streak. Now, what makes this newsworthy is that this is going to be the end of a long, long run at Apple Tree's current theater. Next year, Apple Tree will be on a temporary stage as they are looking for a new permanent home. Now, this marks the end of an incredible run from a company in a terrific space. Now, head up there to Highland Park and check it out. That's the winning streak at Apple Tree Theater. Don't miss it. And a little bit of news coming out of Minneapolis. I don't know if you've heard, but over 20,000 people crammed into the new Guthrie Theater that opened last Sunday. All 20,000 people got a first look at the new three-stage theater sitting on the banks of the Mississippi River. Now, the new $125 million theater was designed by a French architect, Jean Nouvel, and was a project that was 5 years in the making. The theater was founded by Sir Tyrone Guthrie and is considered the first significant regional theater in the United States when it opened back in 1963. So if you're looking for a weekend trip, head on up to Minneapolis and check out the three new stages. And Talk Theater in Chicago would like to congratulate the Joffrey Ballet for having a wildly successful 50th anniversary gala that brought in more than 1,100 guests and also raised over $1.5 million for the ballet company. And not only was it a grand time had by all, but it also brought together over 130 dancers who had danced for the Joffrey Ballet in its past. And what do you feed 1,100 guests and 130 dancers at a grand reunion? Why, filet mignon, of course. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with news ready to stick in your ears. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here's my review of M. Proust. M. Proust by Mary Zimmerman, directed by Eric Rosen, produced by About Face Theater at Steppenwolf's Upstairs Theater. Mary Beth Peel magnificently presents a tribute to Marcel Proust. Mary Zimmerman has a long interest in Marcel Proust, who was born in 1871 and died in 1922. Mary Zimmerman, in her world premiere one-woman show, M. Proust, is a major triumph for her, for About Face Theater, and director Eric Rosen. It is also a tour de force for veteran Broadway actress Mary Beth Peel. This is a flawless, totally engaging, and richly psychological explanation of the obsessive relationship between Celeste, Albert, and Marcel Proust. It is a theatrical treat of the first order. Dan Osling's set, complete with tall doors, large windows, and brown classical French architecture, was amazingly effective, particularly with the rear lighting by Chris Binder. These effects deftly depict the scenes and underscore the mood created by Celeste Albert. She tells her story from her the 8 years she spent with Marcel Proust as his housekeeper and personal assistant and confidant from 1913 until his death in 1922. It is now 1973, and Albert decides to break her 50-year silence concerning her knowledge of Marcel Proust's life. She became irritated at the scholars depicting Proust as a gay man who enjoyed male prostitution. Through her detailed 84-minute monologue, Mary Beth Peel smoothly engages us into the tale of the unique nocturnal lifestyle of the prolific French novelist. I learned much about Proust, and I became enthralled with the many Proust quotes and vivid stories Peel creatively conveys to paint a portrait of Proust from her personal experience. I was riveted to my chair listening to Peel's articulate and often amusing rendition of the stories Proust shared with her. We realized that Celeste was as obsessed with Proust as he was obsessed with completing his 7-volume masterwork, Remembrance of Things Past, or the English title is In Search of Lost Time. We learn that Proust wrote vivid stories about male prostitution, homosexual relationships, yet Celeste denied Proust was gay, contrary to most scholars' assessment of the man. Mary Zimmerman varies the storytelling pace, and director Eric Rosen deftly stages the show with terrific lighting to give the one-person monologue the look and feel of a multi-character show. Mary Beth Peel depicts the many characters Proust wrote about so effectively that I swear I saw them on the stage. Once this 84 minutes conclude, we think we know more about Proust and Albert, yet we leave the theater thinking that their relationship lives up to one of Proust's principal tenets, that we can never truly know another person. I believe Proust hid his gay encounters from Albert out of his love and respect for her. To learn more about this amazing French novelist, Marcel Proust, sample his world, his style, and obsessions. Get to the Steppenwolf Upstairs Theater to see Mary Beth Peel command the stage as Celeste Albert. She adores and defends Proust, while generously allowing us to hear his language and take a look at the Belle Iroquois society of the early 20th century Paris. I was enchanted, educated, and entertained by M. Proust, and so will you. This is a must-see show. Trust me on this one. My rating on this show, not to be missed. It is M. Proust. It is produced by About Face Theater at Steppenwolf's Upstairs Theater, which is at 1650 North Halsted in Chicago. The running time is 84 minutes with no intermission. For more information, by the way, the ticket price runs from between $25 and $40 ticket price. For more information, call 312-355-1650. That's 312-355-1650. This is Tom Williams thanking you for listening. And remember, go see a play this week. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Don't Make Me Over, in tribute to Dionne Warwick. Don't Make Me Over, in tribute to Dionne Warwick. Written and directed by Jackie Taylor, musical direction by Jimmy Tillman at Black Ensemble Theater. Smooth, tuneful tribute to Dionne Warwick at Black Ensemble. Continuing the season of women, Black Ensemble offers one of their finest productions to date with Don't Make Me Over, in tribute to Dionne Warwick. Using her familiar formula that has a narrator, Miss Divine, played by the feisty Janelle M. Smith, tells Warwick's story through short anecdotes and summaries of her musical achievements. Jackie Taylor allows this tribute to shine through the songs. Yes, it is about Dionne Warwick and Burt Bacharach and Hal David's collaboration that produced many of the famous songs of the 1960s and the 1980s. We meet Dionne Warwick's gospel-singing family as they outline how Dionne came from a successful, affluent gospel family that saw her place in college ahead of her performing in the early days. Yes, Dionne Warwick did come from a successful gospel-singing family that had many people that were famous besides her. They landed the gospel tunes terrifically. Particularly, Jacquel Thomas and Marquisha Jordan were absolutely wonderful. Janelle Smith, as the narrator, deftly sings the lead as we hear three stylish performers who land Warwick's songbook wonderfully. I think it was a great idea of Jackie Taylor to use three performers, three absolutely wonderful, powerful voices, to do Dionne Warwick, because when you're doing a tribute that has 22 songs, you would burn out any singer that had the belt, 22 songs, one after another. So Paulette Bruce, Carrie, and Alexis J. Roberts are a treat, each as Dionne Warwick. They each brought a little bit different flavor to it. The terrific voices didn't imitate Warwick. Rather, they sang in her style. Tunes like Always Something There to Remind Me, Window of the World, I Say a Little Prayer, Message to Michael, Do You Know the Way to Santa Fe are smoothly sung, and Jimmy Taylor's band never sounded so fluid, making this tribute go right to your heart. Hearing her hits emerge from the 60s brought back fond memories for me, definitely. The production featured a cute dance number with the Walk On By, where Jackie Taylor is using some of her dancers to come out, and in each show there's at least one good dance number. I hope she starts doing more of that. The show also pays tribute to Burt Bacharach and Hal David, whose polished songs and smooth arrangements made Dionne Warwick, the collaboration with Dionne Warwick, produce some of the greatest tunes of the 60s and the 80s. Classy style, flowing harmonies, and memorable lyrics flow from Warwick's strong, disciplined voice. And I must say, the Burt Bacharach arrangements, featuring kind of a bossa nova sound with the smooth jazz flavor, really worked well. Act 2 covers Dionne's career sliding slightly after a 10-year breakup with Burt Bacharach and Hal David. They don't go into details on what happened, but you know that they stayed together for 10 years and then they broke up for 10 years. And she came back with a song called Then Came You. Jackie Taylor adds her own up-tempo tune, Keep On Moving, to the mix. It seems each show Jackie Taylor writes one or two very clever up-tempo songs. I wonder when we're going to see an entire show of Jackie Taylor originals. The emotional ballad, I Know I'll Never Love This Way Again, signified Dionne Warwick's comeback. She reunited with Bert and Hal with I'll Never Fall in Love Again, which is one of her great hits, and the title song from the movie, Alfie. We cherish these quality songs. The tribute ends with an emotional rendition with the entire company of the AIDS fundraising song that Warwick got many of the pop stars to join her in, and that's what Friends Are For, which raised millions of dollars for the AIDS awareness and the AIDS programs, which is a tribute to Dionne Warwick. Let me say that Dionne Warwick fans will be in heaven with this production, and teens will enjoy this introduction to many of the classiest songs of the 60s and the 80s. Jimmy Tillman's band and the singers were so smooth that Burt Bacharach and Hal David's songbook stands out. Kudos to Jackie Taylor for this tribute to one of the best singers ever. My rating for this show? Highly recommended. It is the tribute to Dionne Warwick. The exact title is Don't Make Me Over in tribute to Dionne Warwick. It is at Black Ensemble Theater, 4520 North Beacon in Chicago. The running time is 2 hours and 30 minutes with intermission. It runs through August 27th. And the ticket price is $35. The number for information is 773-769-4451. That's 773-769-4451. This is Tom Williams saying, go see a play this week. Thank you.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest today is Matthew Friedman, who is one of the lead vocalists and piano players for a terrific show that will be coming to Chicago on the 28th, Moving Out with Billy Joel Music. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Tell us about the show, because I know it started here in Chicago a few years ago and then went on to tremendous success in New York, and now the tour. So tell us about Moving Out.
Well, Moving Out is a really sort of unique production. It combines fantastic dance choreographed by Twyla Tharp and the unbelievable music of Billy Joel. And Twyla Tharp took characters from Billy Joel's songs and gave them lives of their own and created a storyline about them, which is sort of like a 20-year journey from the 60s to the 80s and how their lives are affected by that.
And that's how they're telling their story through dance and through the music and lyrics, right? There's no dialogue in the show, is it?
Yes, it's basically 99.9% dialogue-free. The dancers propel the story and the lyrics sort of tell the story.
Well, it certainly did, and I remember seeing it when they were showcasing it here before they took it to New York. And although there was a few little twinks it needed, I thought it was a very interesting show. And I had the honor of meeting Billy Joel there, and I understand that you have had that honor also.
Yes, I've had the honor. I actually got to play with him and for him at his wedding. Pretty incredible experience.
Yeah,
it also led to me actually getting this production, which is, a fantastic thing.
Well, and you are doing Billy Joel songs, and you're singing his. You're kind of playing Billy Joel.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, no one can be Billy Joel. I can only hope to, approximate him for the audience. But it is an honor, and his music is just so much fun to play, and such an amazing challenge to play because it, it really is complex and beautiful music, and I just love doing it every night.
Well, and to keep yourself fresh and to keep your voice going, because I wonder that when I saw the original show, I wondered how anybody could do that show eight shows a week and still keep their voice going.
Well, actually, I only do the show four times a week. I alternate with Darren Holden, who's the other piano man. Darren's actually been on the tour for over 2 years, and I just joined in January of this year. So we alternate, we do four shows a week each, and that's basically how we keep ourselves healthy, because it is really very strenuous. There's a lot of very challenging singing in this show, and it's really hard to do more than four shows a week.
But tell us now some of the songs that are in it, because some of the Billy Joel people would love now say, hey, what's in the show?
Well, he's got some of his more well-known songs, like Scenes from an Italian Restaurant and Big Shot and, of course, Moving Out. Good Night Saigon, which is one of his most amazing and powerful songs. And some of his lesser-known songs, which are still amazing, like Shameless, which was, I think, actually made famous by Garth Brooks originally on the country circuit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And, you know, that is also another really amazing and powerful song, and I'm glad it actually gets to be heard by a mass audience in this way, because it really is beautiful.
So you make a strong attempt to sing the songs sort of in his style, but within your style.
Yeah, I think that it would sort of be, I would almost say, insulting to try to imitate Billy Joel, because there is only one Billy Joel, and really what I just try to do is try to make people at times sit and says, wow, that reminds me of Billy. But it's important to be yourself and do your own show. And Darren does his own show, and I do mine, and they're very different, and they're, I hope, both very entertaining.
Now, when they did the original one that I saw in Chicago before they took it to New York, they had you up high.
We're still up high. Actually, in New York, when the production was there, the stage moved. It was a hydraulic stage. It went down to the floor and up, 20, 25 feet, and it moved throughout the show. On the tour, the stage is stationary but still placed above the dancers, so everyone is on stage at the same time. We're just above the action.
That must have taken you some to get used to moving.
It did. I'm no lover of heights, that's for sure, but I'm used to it now, and it is sort of fun to get to look down during the show and watch the dancers do their thing. They are amazing.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal dance show and a lighting show. I mean, it's a real spectacle.
Yeah, the lighting is really amazing and actually award-winning, I believe. It really is incredible. And there's a certain moment in the show that I always love where some very, very bright lights shine on the audience. And they sort of, recoil for a second. And it's sort of entertaining to me to see that, to watch the audience who's so, enraptured by what they're watching, then have to shield their eyes a little bit. It just makes me chuckle a little bit while I'm going.
Well, tell us about some of the people that are in the cast, because I understand some of the originals that did it on Broadway for a number of years are on this tour.
Absolutely. Right now we have Elizabeth Parkinson and Lori Kanyok alternating the role of Brenda, and both of them were in the original Broadway cast. Right now the role of Eddie is being played by Ron Tartarowski and James Sofranco, also alternating, and I believe both of them also did it on Broadway as well. Many of the performers in the cast were on the original Broadway production and have just come out here on the tour.
Wow, and so this is a show for Billy Joel lovers and for lovers of dance shows.
Absolutely, the dance is really amazing, and when I first came out here, I really didn't know much about it. And I got to watch the show several times and watch these dancers do their thing, and as hard as it is for me to do what I do, I don't know how these dancers walk out of the theater when they're done. What they do is so physically brutalizing to them. And yet they go on night after night, and they just float and fly. And it's an amazing thing to see.
A lot of people have called Moving Out sort of a modern ballet.
I guess that would be true. I like to call it a narrative dance show.
Narrative dance show. That's a good term.
Yeah, I think that sort of encompasses it. The music is the narrative, and the dance propels the story. And I think that's kind of a good way to term it.
Now, are the lyrics of the songs, the way they've selected the songs and in the order are they doing, do the lyrics tell some of the story of what the dancers are dancing or doing on the stage?
Absolutely. And that's part of Twyla Tharp's amazing ability. She took those lyrics and somehow managed to connect them all together and make a story out of it. It's really pretty excellent how she did it.
Yeah, and to me it reminds me a little bit, I don't know if you've ever seen The Joffrey.
I've actually seen The Joffrey one time, but I'm not a dance aficionado. What I've learned about dance, I've learned since I've been out here. So, to me it's just a very original production in and of itself.
Okay, and you really wanted to get in this show.
Yes, I did. I tried for 2.5 years to get this show. When I first heard about it, a friend of mine was the drummer for the original Broadway production, and he suggested that I try out, and he sort of kept my name in the mix. And then I had the very good fortune to play Billy Joel's wedding.
Yeah, tell us that. How you got to do it. I mean, you just don't walk in and say, hey, I'm your wedding band. I mean,
no, it was purely an accident, really. I was doing a jazz session in Coney Island with a bunch of musicians that I had known from the wedding circuit. One of them got a call to do the wedding, to do Billy's wedding. It was for a different band that I typically work for. But he just told the band director, I've got a guy here who should be at this wedding. And they put me on without ever hearing me, without ever seeing me, put me in the band. And, you know, we got to showcase for Billy a week before the wedding. And when Billy heard me, he said he wanted me to do his dinner hour. And that's what happened. I ended up doing the dinner hour solo for all those guests. And, you know, some people from the show were there, including Michael Cavanaugh, who was the original Broadway piano man. And when he heard me do my thing, he started pushing me. And if not for him and his extra push, I honestly wouldn't be.
Well, that's quite an endorsement, because he was tremendous in it.
Michael is unbelievable. Yes. I actually had the, you know, the good fortune of getting to see him a few weeks ago. I was actually under the weather, and they flew Michael out to do a few performances for me in Omaha. And Michael came in here, and he hadn't done it in a while, and it was as if he never left. He is just an amazing, consummate performer.
Well, he did it for several years, didn't he, in New York?
Yeah, he did. He was there from the very beginning. He was there from Chicago, and he was there until the last performance.
Well, is this your first show of this type, where you're doing someone else's material, you know, in a major show, you know, four times a week?
This is my first show of any kind. Before I came out here in January, I was a Wall Street attorney.
Is that right?
Absolutely. I was an attorney for 11 years working on Wall Street, you know, going to court, going to the office, carrying the briefcase, wearing the suit, and was doing music on the side. I was in a band with my brothers, and we'd play at little divey clubs in the city, and I would do weddings on the side for a few extra bucks, and was just looking for a way to get out of a law career and into the music career full-time. And
boy, most people go the other way.
Yeah, pretty much. I sort of went the reverse and long route to get where I am, but I really wanted this, and I didn't want to give it up, and I didn't get it my first shot. It took me, you know, three auditions to get it, but I wasn't going to give up. I wanted this show.
Well, you know, your testimony to all those people who have nice career. I mean, being a lawyer is not a bad situation. I'm sure you were doing well.
I was doing okay, and, you know, I didn't mind it so much, and it certainly served its purpose. But, you know, the longer I did it, the more I wanted to get out of it and try something else. And when this opportunity came along, it gave me the push I needed to leave the law behind and get into music.
Well, that should give some encouragement to some of our listeners who are in, you know, jobs that, nice professions that, you know, everyone tells them, you know, don't leave your day job, but that you have to chase your dreams and you
absolutely
have to go after what you want to go, right?
No, absolutely. I was never going to give up on this. Once I heard that this opportunity existed, I just, you know, did everything I could to grab it. And, you know, I had the good fortune of getting it, but, you know, if I had given up after the first audition, you know, I'd still be going to court every day, and I wouldn't be happy about it. But, you know, I didn't give up. I just went for it, and lo and behold.
So you're never too young or never too old to do what you want to do.
Absolutely.
And you know, as hokey as that is, so many young kids, they feel they're trapped in whatever.
No, I understand that, and I've actually spoken to a lot of kids, a lot of high school students over the course of this tour. We try to set up some, you know, educational opportunities for them to come down to the theater and to talk to us. The show does that, I love talking to them and telling them, you know, how I was involved in, you know, in music and drama in high school and college, and but went the professional route, but never wanted to give up on the dream. And when that opportunity comes, you have to grab it.
Yeah, and you did, and you didn't look back.
No, and I don't intend to look back either.
That is true. And so you're with this tour now for how long? Most of the tours are what? You sign on for like 6 months or a year?
Signed until October, but, you know, I've been told hopefully I'll be here until the tour is over. So I hope they're happy with me. I'm having, you know, a great time, and we're about to go on a 6-week tour in Japan. And really looking forward to that. I've never been there, and it should be great.
So you're getting used to the life on the road?
Yeah, I'm getting used to it. It's not an easy life, but it is a lot of fun, and I love the people that I work with, which makes it, you know, very easy. I love the band. I love the dancers. Everyone in the production has made it a very easy and excellent transition.
Oh, that's great. Well, let me ask you this. When you move from city to city, I know the venues change. How much of an adjustment? Tell us about how that works. I mean, you got this big dance show. You guys are set up ahead of them, and you have a ton of lighting cue. I mean, there's a lot involved here.
Actually, you know, the real superstars of this show are the crew. I really do not comprehend how they do what they do, but somehow they build this entire stage. You know, everything you see on that stage travels with the show, and they build it all in 10 hours, and they tear it down in 5, and they do it in every town, never a problem. These guys are just amazing. And it has to be seen to be believed.
And, of course, how about the size of the venues? Like, you're going to play the Auditorium Theater, which is that's a large house. I don't know if you've ever been here.
No, I've been to Chicago once, okay. Many, many years ago, and it wasn't to play.
Yeah, and it's like seats like 4,000.
Wow.
And it was, I think, Sullivan the Architect's dream. It was the first theater that had air conditioning, and the first one had electric lights. Like over 100 years old.
Well, I'm refreshed to hear that there'll be air conditioning in there, because it gets hot in that stage sometimes.
Yeah, oh yeah. But this is one, I mean, you talk about selling out, you know, projecting to the second balcony.
Yeah, the sound guys are amazing, too. They make sure that everyone in that audience from the first row to the last row is going to hear it perfectly. And, you know, I actually have had occasion to sit in the last row and watch the show, and it always sounds great from there. So.
Isn't it amazing how good the sound is? Because that's one of the things I pointed out when it first came through here to Chicago. So many shows, you know, they just have the sound too loud.
And that's, you know, I give credit to the sound guys who do this show. They study each venue when they get there. They do a very full and detailed sound check when they get there, and they make sure that when the audience is hearing this, they're not going to be blown out of the auditorium, but they're going to hear the music the way it should be heard.
Well, you're the principal vocalist, right?
Yes, I am.
You don't have to scream over the music.
Yeah, they make it easy for me, really. Yeah. I mean, I have great sound up there on stage. We have in-ear monitors that feed the sound directly to us, and, you know, it's I wouldn't say it's easy to sing, but it's certainly easier than it could be.
Well, I mean, the lyrics are so. I was never a big Billy Joel fan. He was one of those, you know, I was always in more of the Broadway and more of the classical stuff, but you always knew it. And then when I came to this show, I said, wow, you talk about showcasing a great artist.
Well, he's a poet. You know, he really is. As much as he's a great musician and a great piano player, he is a poet. And, you know, when you listen to those words, especially on songs like, you know, Good Night Saigon, I think that, honestly, that song is the best representative work to talk about the Vietnam War experience. It puts you there. And a lot of his songs have that effect of putting you in the situation that he's singing about. And
they create those tremendous moods.
Right. And I think that's why the show works as well as it does, because, you know, he really is, you know, such a great writer.
And of course, he's creating these moods with the lyrics and with the music. And then the dancers are acting it out on stage.
Yeah, and they really do. And it's amazing how much storytelling they can do with just moving and not speaking. I mean, they really tell the story in every way they move their hand, and every facial expression, and every jump. It's just, they really, you know, tell thousands of words in those moves.
Well, you know, one of the side benefits of a show like Moving Out and Contact before it was it introduces people that movement can tell stories, which is really ballet. It kind of, you guys are kind of showcasing, you know, ballet that people think is boring.
Well, there's nothing boring about this dancing. I mean, when you watch it, it is, you know, high voltage, high energy, really exciting stuff. And these dancers are so acrobatic and so strong. I mean, when you watch them do what they do, you'll just be blown away.
Oh yeah, people don't think dancers like this are athletes. I think they're better than most of the athletes in professional sports.
They're better than any athletes I've ever met.
Yeah,
they're just amazing.
And they must be fun to hang around with too.
Well, they are definitely fun to hang around. They all have great personalities and very different personalities, and they're just a blast. You know, I really have enjoyed every minute of hanging around with them and becoming friends with them. It's been great.
Okay, and so you're going to be here in Chicago from June 28th, I'm looking at my notes here, to July 9th.
Correct.
at the Auditorium Theater. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to this show, because when we saw it, you know, we saw it way before Broadway, and there, we kind of critiqued the show and we made suggestions that we found out that our suggestions they did to tighten the show up before they took it to New York.
Yeah, I think you have to give Twyla Tharp a lot of credit for that, because, you know, a lot of people when they have a vision of a show, you know, they have it in their heads and they're not really willing to listen to what anyone else might suggest. And I think that, you know, to Twyla's credit, she did. And, you know, made this show work. I mean, I did not see it when it was in its embryonic stages in Chicago, so I am only familiar with it from when it got to New York and when basically all the final changes had been made. But from what I understand, she did a fantastic job of tightening it up and making it work even better.
Well, that's a sign of a real pro, you know, especially in a musical. You know, it's a combined effort of a lot of creative people. And, you know, there's one theory that says the show is never complete.
Well, that's true. I mean, I try to do a different and better show every night when I'm singing. I try to, you know, do something a little different and, you know, a little stronger and a little better every night.
And how do you keep your vocals going? Is there big warm-ups you do? Or because a lot of people think that, you know, they almost think like it's records. Like, well, that's easy. You just get up and sing. Well, there's a lot more to it.
Well, I've had the very good fortune in my life of having a very elastic and recuperative voice that I could just sing as much as I want. However, I've never been in a situation where I've been singing as much and as intensely as I'm doing now. And I found that, you know, I've had to start warming up a little bit before shows. You know, I do a 45-minute warm-up before a show to get myself ready. I drink a lot of tea, and I stay very quiet on the days that I don't perform. But it really hasn't been much of a problem. I had one little hiccup a few weeks ago. Like I said, I had a little laryngitis, and you know, that was a little scary. But you know, I sang last night here in Salt Lake, and you know, it was a great show. I was real happy with it, and you know, luckily and knocking on wood, my voice has held up really well.
What's been the reaction of audiences in the various venues, and how does it vary? I mean, Salt Lake City is certainly a different audience than, let's say, Boston. I think you played Boston, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Surprisingly, the Salt Lake City audience, at least surprisingly to me, was extremely enthusiastic about this show.
Wow. Because this show's a bit sensual, and, you know,
there's a little risque subject matter in this show that, you know, I worried an audience here might not want to see, but you know what? They really loved it. They've, you know, they're really taken to it, and they are very enthusiastic about it, and that makes us happier. You know, that makes us want to perform, you know, even better for them. I think all the audiences have been pretty good. You know, I really haven't seen a bad audience anywhere. So,
how long does it take you to feel the audience? I know I've talked to actors that they can sense an audience, you know, before the curtain goes up, before the lights come up.
That is definitely true. When the lights go down, you know what kind of audience you're going to have. If you hear a little, you know, a little roar of applause before you start, you know you've got an enthusiastic audience. If you hear nothing, you know, it's going to be a tense night, and you have to win them over. And, you know, luckily, you know, this production is good enough, and the people are good enough that we've done a pretty good job winning the people over, and I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, because we weren't sure when it first came out, shows like this, other than Contact, there hadn't really been shows like this, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely different, and I certainly hadn't seen anything like this show when I saw it for the first time. And actually, the first time I saw it, I didn't know what to make of it.
We didn't. Like I said, I thought it had minor problems that they've adjusted, but I thought the concept was brilliant.
Well, the concept really does work, and again, that's to Twyla's credit. She's just an amazing visionary person.
Did Billy Joel do any new arrangements for this, or because I don't know his music that well, but it seemed to me that most of the songs I heard Kavanaugh do really sounded, you know, they were very similar in arrangements to the, you know, the original hit.
They are really very similar. There were some very, very minor changes made in some lyrics just to make them fit the storyline a little bit better, and some of the songs have been a little condensed for time. There were a couple of changes, though. We Didn't Start the Fire became a much heavier rockin' song. And as did Pressure. Pressure is now, I think, twice as fast as it was in the original.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's really a challenge to play and sing at that speed. So, but other than those two major exceptions, the songs are pretty true to what you've heard on the record.
Okay, and could you give us just a quick little summary of what's going on? I mean, we know it's dance, we know it's Billy Joel music, and what would you call the theme?
Well, basically, the storyline itself is the story of five friends growing up in the 60s. You know, Vietnam comes along and separates the men from the women, and some of the men make it and some of them don't. And when they get back to civilization, they have a hard time dealing with it and with each other. And basically, it's a story of finding yourself after that kind of disruption in your life and finding redemption and love. And that's really what the story is.
That's a great summary.
Well, thank you.
That's how I remember it. And of course, that's my era.
Well, yeah, so, I was born at the end of the Vietnam War, but believe it or not, I lived on Fort Benning Army Base in Georgia during the early 70s, and my dad was in the Army at that time, and I was not unaware of it even when I was 3 and 4 years old of what was going on. It did make an impression.
Well, it almost has resonance to what's going on today.
Yeah, it's very relevant, especially in light of what is going on today with what's going on in Iraq. And hearing the stories of these soldiers disappearing and never to be seen again, and disruptions in the lives of family, and hopefully people will be able to find peace and happiness after this is all over, and hopefully it will end.
Wow, great. So you're in Chicago June 28th to July 9th. Where do you go after Chicago?
After Chicago, actually, the production goes on a short break for 2 weeks, and then we head right over to Japan.
Oh, then you're heading right over.
Yeah.
Oh, very, very interesting. Well, I'm sure as they do the Google searches, and a lot of people in Japan will listen to this podcast to figure out what's coming. And I think they're going to get excited because the Japanese are a great audience for American musicals.
Yeah, I've been told, and I really hope they like it. I'm really looking forward to going over there and playing for them. I've always wanted to go to Japan, and you know, again, it's sort of a dream of mine, just like the show was a dream of mine. You know, to get to travel over there and see it for that long and to perform for the people there is just going to be amazing.
Yeah, it should be good. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there on the opening night.
Great.
And be doing a review of it. And are you going to be playing on the 28th?
I'm actually not playing the 28th. Okay. I play the 29th matinee. That'll be my first show.
You're saying each of you have a little slightly different take on the music.
Oh, definitely. And again, that's just a function of what kind of musicians we are and what kind of music we listen to, you know, growing up. And how we perform.
Yeah, so, and you know, and you don't want everyone to sound alike. That wouldn't
definitely
work
not. You don't want everybody to be a clone of each other. I think that an audience likes it when you do a little bit of your own thing in there, and they get to see who you are when you're doing Billy Joel's music. I think they really like that.
Yeah, it certainly came off that way when we saw Kavanaugh do it. And
well, I love watching Kavanaugh. I've literally seen him do the show, you know, at least a dozen times. So you know, I never get tired of it.
But, well, we're looking forward to you doing it, and I really appreciate you spending this time with me, and knock on wood, break a leg when you come to Chicago.
It was a pleasure. Thanks a lot for
having
me.
Thank you very much, and folks, go see Moving Out. You'll enjoy it. Thank you.
You got it.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this envious episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote has to deal with lateness, and it comes from The Merry Wives of Windsor, Act 2, Scene 2. Better 3 hours too soon than a minute too late. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.